the coolest boat you can ever do. You've got a guy up on the back pushing around, experience, that knows how to slide a boat in close to a fish without them even knowing you're there.
Yeah.
The visual aspect of all of that, people just come away gobsmacked.
G'day and welcome to another instalment of the Fly Fishers podcast.
Since 1967, we've been spreading the bug of fly fishing at our Melbourne fly shop.
Join us as we celebrate the fun of fly fishing and chat with characters that enjoy it as much as we do.
Whether you're just starting out or have some experience, we hope our ego-free commentary helps demystify fly fishing and inspires you to visit new places and try new techniques.
On a recent trip to Cocos Keeling Islands, we got a chance to chat with Rodney Collings of Australian Fly Fishing Outfitters. Rodney is one of the best saltwater fly fishing guides we know. He's pinpointed and guided some of the most amazing saltwater fly fisheries there are in Australia. Rodney's experience made our trip to Cocos, and we couldn't wait to hear more about the locations he guides and his history in fly fishing. We hope you enjoy the listen.
So here we are. We've got Rodney Collings from Australian Fly Fishing Outfitters. We've been floating around the flats of Cocos Keeling Islands today, having a fat load of fun.
We certainly have.
It's been pretty good, eh?
Lost count of the fish already, I think.
Yeah.
A couple of dozen at least.
That patch of bonefish with just a wave after wave of fish coming was ridiculous, eh?
It was really good, yeah. So, yeah, it's been a really good morning, actually. It's been pretty good fun.
Yeah.
Just pulled up for a drink and a sandwich.
And the fish keep coming, too, of course. So lots of distractions here at Cocos. But yeah, Rodney, this isn't your main, you know, thing. You are a guide out of Hinchinbrook, just north of Townsville mostly.
That's right, yep.
And a little bit of stuff on Maggie as well, out of Townsville.
Yep, around the local area around Townsville, also down the Whitsundays.
Yep.
Also down at Peter Faust Dam, and hopefully soon, with local councils getting things real good on, Townsville, the Ross Dam will be open up in Townsville. So we'll be doing the same sort of thing there with stocked impoundment barra.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah.
Yeah.
And that that East Coast fishing, it's, you know, it can be risky, can't it? Just because of the windy weather, that prevailing easterly wind that you get up there,
yeah,
is that right?
That's right, yeah. So we're at the... We're at the mercy of a pretty stiff southeast trade wind for most of the year. We get good weather periods throughout all of that, obviously, same as everywhere else. But if we didn't have that Great Barrier Reef outside, it'd be a whole different story. There'd be swells pumping on us, just like there is Sydney and Gold Coast, that sort of stuff. So we're pretty fortunate that even though it's windy, it's pretty sheltered, yeah.
Okay, and the island at Hinchinbrook there gives you a bit of shelter.
That's right, yeah. So we've got an array of different creek and river systems, some really big school of bonefish just here. It's distracting me.
So
We've got a bunch of some different types of rivers. Some of them are massive, up to hundreds of kilometres long, to some small oceanside creeks that are all fishable too. So, but yeah, the main Hinchinbrook area, I think there's 300 miles of mangrove coastline sheltered inside there.
Wow.
Where you can always find a particular spot or tide or point or whatever it may be that's working out of the wind somewhere. Yeah, so there's always something. You know, we've been cranked by some pretty gnarly weather so far this year on each charter, but we've always still managed to catch fish. And
that's the thing with that area, isn't it? You've always got a backup plan to make sure that people are putting a bend into their rod.
That's right, yeah. And also when I fish further south, down between Townsville and the Whitsundays, there's probably about four or five different locations in between there that I won't name, but that's where I'm fishing.
Yeah.
They're seasonal, so I fish those areas when the later in the year, when the season, the wind changes, those trade winds stop and the northerlies kick in and it opens up opportunities for a bunch of different sheltered areas in another spot, yeah. So it's good. There's a lot of options, a lot of variety.
Bloody oath, yeah. We might talk a bit more about those different areas in a bit more detail, but probably just to start with, like, when did you find fly fishing? When did it all start for you?
Oh, for me, actually, purchasing my first fly rod and having a crack, I didn't know anyone who fly fished, was in the early 2000s. I moved from WA over to Mackay in Queensland, chasing work. My partner at the time, her family members were involved in some work in that area, and they said, come on over, let's get into some mining money, you know.
Yeah.
So that's how I ended up there. But yeah, I first picked up my first fly rod there. Real cheap $150 combo from the local tackle store, Barra Pro tackle store. And I said to the fella, I said, do you know how to cast this thing? And he said, no, I don't. Here's a video, VHS, you know. It was a Lefty Cray casting instructional video. So I took that and figured it out. But prior to that, it interested me since I was a young kid.
Yeah.
Even as early as I've got, probably my earliest memories of being keen on fly fishing was probably about 8 or 9 years old on holidays with my grandparents at their beach house in the southern reaches of Perth in Mandurah.
Yeah.
And sitting down with the old fish encyclopedia, and there was something about fly fishing in there, and there was images of a fly tying process in there.
It was so different, wasn't it, back in those days, you know? Like, so the way we were getting information was
crazy.
Yeah.
Well, that was it. It was books written by people who were just learning about it themselves, you know?
Yeah.
And sharing information, so it was.
And this probably predates a lot of fly fishing clubs too, so there probably wasn't that avenue for you.
Well, I didn't know anyone who fly fished, and I didn't actually know that fly fishing was such a big thing, especially the saltwater stuff.
Yeah.
We'd bumped into the likes of Max Garth and those guys in some early magazine articles fishing up in the northwest of WA, so I sort of had an idea that you could catch big fish in saltwater on fly. So anyway, I figured it out that you couldn't move to move to Mackay. We got right into it,
And that area around Mackay, did you get to the point of actually having a skiff or a boat that you could keep
around? I didn't. So I bought a tinny. So prior to that, I'd always fish land-based and some pretty serious fishing, some pretty good land-based game fishing. I've caught some pretty good stuff land-based off Steep Point and Quabba and off the beaches in southwest of WA. But I've always gotten seasick, so I'd figured that out at a young age by going on charters that I'd got crook offshore, so boats just didn't really tickle me. It was always land-based stuff. So when I moved to the East Coast and the sheltered waters and the empowerments around town, around Mackay, I bought a tinny, a little 435 Staser V-nose punt thing. And
perfect.
Yeah, so that got me around. Actually, fished one of the first ABT tournaments in Teamborough and Peter Faust in that little tinny, and won it. Yeah, this little tinny with a 20 on the back, 20 horsepower or something.
Yeah.
So then after that, was there for maybe a year or year and a half, and then moved to Townsville.
Yeah,
and it was time for a new boat, so I bought this old big old fiberglass, very similar to a like a Boston Whaler tri-hull sort of thing, and then I stripped it down and custom turned it into a skiff, put a poling platform on it, and used to push it around with a big old bamboo pole, you know.
Unreal.
That was how I got around. And
yeah, so had you seen other people kicking around like that?
Davo and the crew, those boys, So I knew, I think Dave at that time had his scout, Dave Bradley at AFO, before I had it. And I'd been, involved in the fly fishing forum, which was the Australian Saltwater Fly Fishing Forum, massive resource for me in the early days.
So,
figuring out about skiffs and boats and flats and then met a couple of good guys in Mackay and Townsville and it just grew from there, man.
Yeah, so the sight fishing thing for you though, because it sounds like that's your, if you could pick one aspect of fly fishing, it is Polaroiding,
100%.
Shallow water for things like permit.
And even the fresh or the shallow, if I'm looking at a fish that I can present a fly to, that's my jam. Probably similar to a lot of fly anglers, I would imagine.
Do you remember when that first started to become a thing?
Yeah, I do. So that was in Mackay. We used to walk quite a few flats just north of Mackay, and I won't say names, but we used to put a group together and drive up. Oh, the guys, Fenton and Mark Woolley, Neil Cunnington, Darren Jennings were the early guys around Mackay that got us involved in fly fishing. But anyway, everyone had a passion for just getting on the flats. So they had a bit of a spot north of Mackay that they showed to me, and it was Goldies and Permit tailing on the flats, and I was just hooked. That was it. That was the jam for me.
Yeah.
And then just started exploring, and I think I don't think Google Earth was out then for satellite imagery, but we used to just drive around and look for spots that we knew had sand flats and things like that.
Yeah.
And the first time I saw a tailing permit was me buggered. I still remember the story the question I wrote onto the forum at the time was, I've seen this thing with these sticking out fins. Is that do you think it's a Goldie or a permit? What am I looking at? And there was a whole bunch of comments back. That's probably a permit. That looks like that sort of thing that they would do.
Yeah, wow.
So I was just focusing on that and trying to get one and ended up getting it done, So then also met another fella who's very instrumental in showing me flats fishing. That was Andy Thompson. He lived in that area. He was in Whitsundays and showed me a bunch of flats around the Whitsundays and actually caught my first permit with him and showed me some pretty cool stuff.
There's always, someone that's had influence influence in your fly fishing journey.
Absolutely, yeah. Those guys were pretty key in it. Yeah.
At what point did it become more than just a passion for you and turned into a business, or at least even part-time guiding? Did it start out like that for a bit?
Yeah, it did. I was doing a little bit with Davo, just helping him out. That was only coming into COVID. So what's that, 2019, 2020?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's when I kicked into part-time. Within a year or so, I was full-time, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. So I haven't been guiding for that long.
Yeah.
But I've been, as in commercially, professionally guiding for 4 years.
Yeah.
Prior to that, I would just love standing on the back of a boat watching someone catching on the front.
Yeah.
I could share that with people, and that's where I was like, man, I really want to get into this and make a career out of it.
Yeah.
Well, not a career. I've already had my career, but this is probably the tail end of my career, I suppose. I'm 53 this year, so it's a great way to wrap it all up.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Yeah. No, if you can be anywhere, staring at water, makes you happy.
Absolutely, yeah. 100%. Especially off the back of a skiff. It's like I say it to many people, standing up on this pole and platform, looking down at what I look down on every single day, whether it's at home or here. It's like I'm watching my own TV show, fishing TV show, continually now, all the time.
Yeah.
There's always something cool going down at some point of the day that it just, my jaw drops still every day.
No, there really is, mate. That, yeah, it's constantly entertaining. But what about, so let's talk a bit about Hinchinbrook, because I feel like for AFO, that really was the area that kind of put you guys on the map. You
know, that's right,
obviously with Dave in charge at that point and building that area. Yep. And
really nutting out that permit fishery, which was pretty key to putting Hinchinbrook on the map. You know, like the early days of AFO, I think Dave was mostly focused on the barra fishing stuff. And then as his knowledge of fly fishing improved and started implementing, finding fish in different places, I'm guessing, you know, imagine living and working in a place like that for 5 or 8 years. Imagine the things you'd see and start expanding what you wanted to do, which was obviously the flat stuff that he started really getting into.
Yeah.
And he had some guys that he was involved in the early days that were pretty instrumental in finding, you know, being keen on fishing the flats too and sharing information and throwing stuff together. But Dave really, really nutted that stuff out there. And,
You know,
probably the early 2000s, I think he started really nutting out that permit stuff.
Yeah, it's a big fishing area, isn't it? You know, like a lot of these other places could easily suffer from pressure, but there is a lot of water between fish up there. And it seems like take the permit, for instance, which is the draw card for most people that might head up that way.
Mm-hmm.
Is there always fresh fish that are coming into the system?
You would like to say yes, and there, you know, talking about the fishing pressure and the amount of space up there, the fishing pressure is pretty minimal. There's another outfitter up there doing pretty much exactly the same thing, which is saltwater flats fishing.
Yeah.
And I see him out there often. We're working in the same space all the time, never really getting in each other's way. There's plenty of fresh water, clean, clear water to fish that someone else hasn't had a skiff on already in front of you.
Yeah.
Which, you know, like I listen to a lot of podcasts about the guys in the States and areas they're fishing. They might be sharing a particular bank or flat with another half a dozen, 8, 15 guides.
Yeah.
And taking second dibs on fish that are migrating or travelling through certain areas or whatever, we're pretty lucky. It's
mostly not tapped into.
It's not hammered up there. It's definitely not hammered up where we are. And some days the fishing can be spectacular in an area of a size of a footy field. And other times you might be moving around a section of 10 miles of flats on a coast. You
know?
There's a lot going on there.
The permit game, you know, I've been lucky enough to fish with you at Hinchinbrook a couple of times, and you know, it's challenging, isn't it?
It's not an easy gig. No, certainly not something that an entry-level fly fisherman's going to come and try, because it's going to be tough and it's going to be disappointing most of the time. So it's one of those species that I think people usually work their way up into. You know, it's great to see all the social media hype and different things, magazine articles and all the rest, with all these people holding these amazing permit. But to just book that as maybe one of your first saltwater trips is, you know, who knows? It can happen. You know, we work our hardest. We've got the techniques. We know where to put the boats. We've got all that stuff sorted. So it can happen, but there's a lot of guys that come for a couple of trips to nut out and figure out that it's pretty tough. Go home, do a bit of homework and a bit of practice and come back and get it done. So
that's it. You know, like it's... I feel like the guide in permit fishing is working hard, but the client needs to be working hard too. The fisherman, the guy on the bow of the boat
100%,
needs to be on point. He needs to be, have his eyes peeled. He needs to be looking. He can't be relying on you for everything. You know?
And needs to be sharp and reactive and needs to know how to put a cast at a certain distance in sometimes tricky wind and a little bit of chop or swell or something like that.
Yeah. It's almost like no one's being spoon-fed a permit.
Sometimes it happens. Sometimes they're just so happy and they're just hanging around and you put a fly there and they'll come and eat it straight away. Other times you can work your bum off and for no reward, you know.
Yeah.
Sometimes.
Yeah.
And they just, that's permit fishing, but you know, that's why there's such a prize trophy.
Yeah.
It's such a, it can be such a difficult thing to achieve if you're not doing it right. You know, one of the sayings we have is you're not catching a permit just by luck.
Yeah.
You know, there is no luck involved in permit fishing.
Yeah.
You know, if you're investing the time and the money to put yourself in a far away location and put yourself with the people that have got it sussed, and you're standing on the bow of that boat and you're in front of a school of permit and you go, oh, that was lucky when I got that fly there. Well, no, you're just flowing all the way up here. You've done all of this. You've practiced, you've done whatever. You've got yourself there. There's no luck involved. It's a lot of skill. It's a lot of skill involved.
Yeah.
Occasionally you get one and it's like...
Yeah.
No one's fluking them, you know. No one's fluking them. You've got to put yourself there to get the hooking one.
Yeah.
It's time for a short break to talk about the legends who bring this podcast to life. Our committed team at The Fly Fisher prepare, record, and edit in-house in South Melbourne. We put huge effort in for you listeners. We hope that means when it comes time to make a fly fishing purchase, you consider us. With your loyalty, we can keep producing these podcasts and bringing you the world's best fly fishing gear. So shop smart and support the fly shop that supports you.
So a normal day for you, like, you know, I'm going to come and fish with you at Hinchinbrook. You know, how does the day normally look like? And I've told you, look, I'm committed to permit fishing.
Okay.
I want to make this happen.
Right, yeah. So first thing we're doing is watching the weather, and we've got probably 8 or 9 different flats that we can fish up in that area.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them are oceanside and some of them are inside the channel and some of them are inside rivers. But we're going to pick the area that we're going to want to fish due to the weather. And then we're normally rolling out of the house. So if you're coming up fishing with me, I'd use a house, which it's not a lodge, it's just a beach house.
Mm-hmm.
And comfortable accommodations. And we kick off in the morning about 7-ish. And we're either driving 5 minutes to a boat ramp or we're driving half an hour tops to one of the other boat ramps. 3 or 4 different boat ramps in the area we use. And then we're normally... allowing for a bit of sun to see. So if we think we've got fish on the right tide on a flat where we might see tails, then we can usually scoot straight onto the flats.
Yeah.
If not, then we're waiting for a bit of sun to be able to actually see fish swim, and then we might go for a half hour or an hour barra fish before we go and hit the flats.
Yeah.
Go and hit some mangroves and have a bit of a sniff around, or go and catch some queenies or trevally or something like that. And then once that sun's up about 8:30, when you can start getting proper decent visibility, then we're on that flat all day, pretty much.
Yeah, right.
Or we may move around depending on the tide and what's going on. But
yeah,
normally I'll book the neapy tides. So I'm not guiding permit every single week of the year. There's no point trying to sell a trip to someone that I think might work.
Yeah.
I'm going to sell a trip to someone that I know is going to work if the weather's right and the fish are happy, you know.
Mm.
So I fish the neapy tides where we've got the least amount of tidal movement in a low in the middle of the day sort of thing. So that's going to increase your chances of time on the flats and visibility on the fish.
Yeah. So, you know, obviously for the permit fishing, there's a lot at Hinchinbrook to offer. But for the guy that, dare I say, is the happy hooker, he just wants to, you know, catch as many fish as possible.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of species up there, isn't there?
That's right, yeah.
And it's reliable.
Yeah, you could get up to 10 species in a day, you know. Like,
yeah.
You get the varieties from, let's start down the smaller size fish like small brim and queenies and things like that, little GTs. You can be in tarpon and bigger queenies and barramundis and jacks and fingermark and then you can get onto the flats and you've got goldies and bigger queenies again and permit there's lots of different things to do.
So many options, eh?
Yeah. And then you get all the sundry species, flathead and barracudas and all that sort of stuff. So if someone wants to just come up and just go fishing, go fly fishing and learn to catch fish in salt water if they haven't done it before, or if they're just not particularly fussed by a permit, then so many options up here.
Yeah.
And there's definitely options that can be taken up on that opposing set of tides that aren't dedicated to the prime time flats tides, where we can fish for a multitude of different species in different locations around Hinchinbrook.
And that's the thing, like, you know, if Hinchinbrook isn't where it's happening, or these other locations you've got, like around Townsville and the Whitsundays, it's a seasonal decision on your part as to where you might set yourself
and
up.
And what the person may want to achieve or do, or, you know, like if some guys come on 10 or 12 day trips and we might do Hinchinbrook, Townsville and down the Whitsundays. We do a 4-day jump into each one and do a tour and catch a whole bunch of different stuff, you know. And a few guys have come from overseas and they want to try and experience as much of Australian saltwater fly fishing as they can. But I'd throw that combo up. It's a 12-day combo.
And that covers everything. That Empowerment Barra thing, you know, for fly fishermen, I think it's... You got to see it, don't you?
Absolutely. Like
it has to be experienced.
Yeah, so that, you know, like you mentioned before, Andrew, about my preferred way to fly fish is sight fishing in the flats, you know. Mm. Well, that empowerment fishing is probably my second favourite thing to do. I love it, you know. It's pretty cool, yeah. And the fact that now, after doing it for a few years and learning some stuff from some friends back in the day, that we can find them tailing and floating and on flats in the dam as well. So I'm poling the skiff around inside the dam with no electric motor. And
just like the skiff being, you know, at home on a saltwater flat, it's equally at home in that empowerment.
On a freshwater flat, which is basically what they are. They're weed-covered freshwater flats.
Yeah.
And the fish are up there feeding, sunbaking, catching the right temperature of water, whatever it may be, it's pretty cool. So, yeah, that empowerment fishing is something I really like too. And getting better and better at getting clients in front of those fish with fly rods too, which is pretty tricky. Yeah, getting that hook into a big barra on fly is not an easy thing to do, man. Like, you can go and fish these empowerments on lures and you're probably going to catch 2 or 3 fish a day, you know, with some of the leading guides are catching 6, 8, 10 fish a day on lures, you know.
Yeah.
But on fly, if you're getting a couple of bites and you might not stick one of them and you might not stick the next one, it might be a tough day, you know.
Yeah.
So it's getting better and better at the techniques, the gear, the lines, the flies, and on getting these hooks stuck on big barras. Yeah, so that's usually the summer months I'm doing that stuff. So yeah, looking forward to that after this cool winter, getting back into that stuff as well.
Bloody oath, yeah. You know, the tools of the trade. Obviously, these skiffs that you guys run there, being a Maverick and a Hells Bay American imported flat skiff.
Yep.
They're a very specialised piece of equipment, aren't they?
That's right, yeah.
You know, there's not many of them floating around the country.
No, maybe half a dozen or eight in Australia, all told. I think there's one skiff, like we're talking about technical poling skiffs, there might be half a dozen in the whole South Pacific. And two of them are here on Cocos Keeling. So the ones we've got running back at home, which is basically exactly the same two boats that Nick's got set up here. But my Maverick is a little bit longer, a little bit bigger than his, but he's got the Maverick and Hells Bay. I've got the Maverick and Hells Bay at home too.
I'm far from
the person who knows everything, the ins and outs of skiffs, but these things, they're all US built. They come from an area where there's been a flats fishery, a skiff fishery for 50 years, 60 years, and where the guys started trying to find fish in shallow water in makeshift old ski boats and stuff like that, and the research and development that's gone into these boats has just put them above and beyond anything you can imagine.
It's crazy, isn't it?
Like, every single person that jumps in these boats, literally, when we either get from the ramp to point A or finish the day and get home, they just look at you and go, how?
Yeah.
I thought I was going to get saturated all the way across there. You know, how is this thing ride so nicely? And well, that's the R&D that's gone into it because of how big a gig it is in the States, I suppose, where lots of people putting their heads together and coming up with good stuff.
You know? Yeah.
But yeah, it's crazy. And, you know, the old don't suit Australian conditions, well, that's such a... you hear it said so much. These skiffs, they don't really suit Australian waters. Well, we're not out offshore chasing bill fishing these things.
No.
We're inshore fishing in sheltered, choppy water.
Yeah.
And they're made for it. That's what they do.
To me, it's like, well, do you like fishing shallow water? And if the answer is yes, well, then you should be running an American flat skiff. You
know, absolutely.
It's just, they're so good for the job.
Yeah, they run shallow, they're comfortable, they're super stable, and they're quiet. And they're quiet in the water. You can push them around without the pole slap. And
they're fly fishing. These are fly fishing vessels. There is just nothing that fly line can get snagged on in these things.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, as you say, the fit and finish and everything on them is just unreal.
Yeah.
And, you know, I know when I pay for a guide, this is what I'm paying for.
That's right.
You know,
whole experience comes with a charter trip like that. Yeah.
Yeah.
You're fishing out of the coolest boat you can ever do. You got a guy up on the back pushing around, experience that knows how to slide a boat in close to a fish without them even knowing you're there.
Yeah.
And the visual aspect of all of that, people just come away gobsmacked with that stuff. You know, you got guys that have been doing this with Davo for 25 years and they know exactly what to expect. But new clients that come on, the new guys that I've got on board, they're just blown away by it all. Man, it is a whole experience. The whole skiff experience is something to check out.
Oh, absolutely. Now, I've been silly enough once to actually grab the pole and jump up here on this poling platform. And I had a spinning around in 360s for, basically an hour.
But that's it. You wouldn't have taken too much longer to get it, but that's just how it works. Yeah. Once you figure out, if you don't go too far this way, that way, then it's sort of going to hold. Like,
sure.
I get these things to the point now where, especially these two smaller boats, the 17 and the Hells Bay Professional 17 and the Maverick HPX 17, I can get them turned around and faced into the wind. So at the moment, we're sitting here, we've got the power pole down and we're stern onto the breeze. And that, you can hear that little smack on the back of the boat, and that's because it's going into the tunnel underneath the engine. That's that little, because we're stern on into a little bit of wind chop. But normally poling, you would be poling into the wind, holding the boat straight. And these things are set up so well that if I get it pointing into the wind, I can just stand there with one hand and hold the pole.
Yeah.
And it'll just hold by itself. It's just crazy how it works.
Yeah.
And I just do a little shimmy that way or a little shimmy that way. And it's very minimal effort to hold the boat still. And even in 20, 25 knots of wind, you just hold it there.
Yeah.
Try and move, try and push forward in it. It's a different story. But you can hold them in even the strongest wind just by putting them. Just the way they're... The shape and the design, everything's low to the water. They don't catch much wind. There's a lot of wind can blow through here. It's not a big sail.
Yeah, they're just a bloody pleasure to fish out of.
They're amazing. Yeah, they really are. Game changer for some of the fishing out there.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Definitely. For that area in particular, that's where these skiffs are so good.
Absolutely.
But Cape York as well, is that still a part of your
itinerary? Big, massive turtle swimming past in about 300 mil of water. Massive big green turtle.
He's going to beach himself. the Cape York thing, you've done a couple of trips up there with AFO.
Four or five up there with Davo. So Dave still looks after the AFO Eclipse mothership trips.
Cool.
I'm his offsider, obviously, help him out with anything he needs. But he's been still looking after that for a few years now. So, yeah, we still do those trips up there on the Eclipse FNQ charters. We use their mothership, which they've just recently refreshed to a new mothership last year, which is the Tropic Princess. So it's still under the business name of Eclipse FNQ Charters, but the Tropic Princess is the boat. She's awesome. She holds a few more people now, and we can put an extra boat on there and an extra guide and run four guides and eight clients on that.
Awesome.
That now. So we do group trips up there for 7-day turnarounds out of Weeper.
Great. And of course, you know, here we are sitting at Cocos Keeling Islands as well, you know, at the Hallow Backing Lodge.
Yep,
and,
that's right.
Yeah. And through winter, you know, like I just love being in a place like this in winter.
Yeah,
I think
sitting here now, getting sun rays on us, just lapping it up. It's, you know, it's probably 27, 28 degrees today.
Yeah, it is just unreal.
Average breeze, it's probably blowing 10 to 15. It's beautiful. We've had mostly sunny days today and for the last week. It's been, been beautiful. So, yeah, normally I'll come here and fish with Nick from Hello Backing as a guide during his normal summer season.
Yeah.
And then we saw some scope for maybe a spot for some fishing here in winter to try and share it with some more people.
Yeah.
And, we're here doing it now with you guys, checking it out, and it's all working really well.
So, it's been amazing. I think, you know, I wasn't sure. You know, like you hear people talk about the doldrums and, you know, will the fish be here, will they not?
Mm-hmm.
But man, it's as good. It's simply as good.
It's the same. Yeah, it's no different.
as
so
it
what,
ever is.
What my train of thought was that maybe in June, July, there may be these full moon spawning congregations that we may be able to target some really big fish in. I know on other atolls in other areas that happens, and that's what sparked my thought about the winter fishing here. But it comes down to it. Some of the, like the school, one of the schools that we saw today was just coming across the flat. And I have videos of the same schools doing the same things. You asked me the question. Is this normal here?
Yeah.
I'm like, yep.
Were you expecting this?
Yeah, that's right.
Because it was so spectacular.
Yeah, that was sort of basically, it was. We got ourselves in a position where fish were being funneled in off a flat, probably maybe, how big is that flat? That flat's probably 3 mile by 5 mile, yeah. 4 mile, something like that. 3 mile by 4 mile, maybe. It's a massive flat, and it sort of funnels off, and that's where we were. Yeah. So that's where they were all coming.
Oh yeah, there's no doubt you had us on the spot there, mate. Yeah. It was unreal.
Yeah. So the whole thing about coming here to check it out in winter was, thinking that I'd see something different, but.
Yeah.
No. If anything, to be honest, maybe I've seen less permit this week than I would through summer. But
yeah. But that could be a week-to-week thing. We might, catch up with each other in a couple of weeks, and you'll be like, oh.
That next set of tides might be different, yeah.
We got 6 permit this week. Yeah. You just never know.
Yeah. But, the fishing's been great, so it's been pretty cool.
Yeah. Look, I know for me, from Melbourne and anyone in the southeast states that suffers a cold winter, it's you just want to get out, and so what is the program, do you think? Is it going to be sort of June, July, August?
No, I think if moving forward, after this 1 month of test run this year, I think there's scope to go May, June, July.
I think
we'll see. So I did a lot of research on historical weather patterns and all that sort of stuff just to get an idea on what this time of the year was going to be like. Spoke to the locals when I was here in the summer season, and they all said it's, be a bit windier, but it's good fishing.
Mm.
And they were spot on, Like, so far it hasn't, the doldrums, yeah, sure, we've got constant 10 to 15s every day since we've been here. It hasn't, it's dropped down one afternoon maybe to 5 to 8 knots for a little while.
Mm.
Turtle trying to hop in the boat with us. The doldrums, yeah, sure. So during that summer season, you might get 3 or 4 days in a row where there's zero wind and it's glassed out and it's 32 degrees and sweating and hot and all that. But you deal with it. That's okay. But the flip on that is the trade winds time now that we're in now, it's not horrendous.
No.
It's definitely fishable. So.
Yeah, yeah.
And we've been fishing Cape York for a bunch of years and it's always blowing. This time of year, it's always blowing exactly the same up there and we still get it done there. So,
I mean, show me a flats fishing destination that isn't windy.
It's just what we deal with. We take the good days when we get them.
Unreal.
Yeah.
Oh, mate, it's amazing, when you think about the options that you've got, you've got tied up some of the best saltwater fly fishing in the country.
I think so, eh?
Yeah.
And I suppose that's one of the joys of not jumping into partnership with Davo, but affiliating with Davo, buying the business off him, buying a business that had been well set up and existing.
Yeah.
Lots of contacts, lots of people that have respected Davo over the years. So basically that's been handed over to me and... he vouched for my integrity and worth, and everyone's believed it and jumped straight on board. So, taking on all of his existing clients, pretty much most of them are all good friends of mine now as well. So,
you're doing a great job, mate. I see the trust and respect that your clients have for you, and obviously I'm a mate of yours and love working with you, and more than anything, fishing with you. We've had a hell of a day here on double hookups, you and I on the bow of the boat. It's been pretty bloody good.
We have. We've seen some cool stuff today too, and other times as well.
It's bloody good,
pretty good
to get you on the podcast.
Good little rundown on what we're up to and what's going on.
Absolutely, mate. I'm sure that this won't be the last episode that we do with you, but we better go and catch a fish, eh?
Let's do that, because there's another school coming in just over here.
Let's do it. Awesome, man.
Righto, man. Thanks, mate.